Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
How's it going? Welcome to Swim Podcast Episode 1. Basically, the whole reason I'm doing this is obviously I got a radio show which goes out on BBC Radio 1 every week. What happens is when bands come through and I interview them, because obviously they're generally here for like the promo trail or whatever, if they're plugging a new album or a single or whatever, artists will come in and you're meant to talk to them about that thing, and then they go off and they do the next one. And generally what I found is, try as they might not want to fall into that trap, but often when they're on a promo trail, they'll do like 15 interviews in a day. And I've been guilty of it myself in, previous incarnations of band life and whatnot, that if you get asked the same questions, you very quickly fall into the rut of just giving the same answers. And that's why quite often there'll be, you know, interviews come out when a band's got a new album and you'll hear it on the radio, you see it online, or you see it in various magazines, and it all becomes a little bit interchangeable. And that's no one's fault, that's just the way it goes. And I figured that quite often when bands come through, I'm kind of a nerd and I like to look into like certain aspects, and I've got my own interests which can be a little bit esoteric, and because of that I try and find those glimpses amongst people's work, and they're some of the best interviews. I think I really enjoy that, and it'll go off on one a little bit, and I know that a lot of artists really enjoy it. So at the end of the day, invariably what will happen is 4 minutes of that interview will get used, because that's the world we live in. You know, when you've got like a 3-hour radio show, you're not going to dedicate 45 minutes of it to one artist talking about their new album. It just seems a little bit excessive. So that's why I wanted to do this podcast, because I felt like there was a lot of good stuff getting discussed that never saw the light of day. So that's what I'm going to attempt to do. So episode one is with Mr. Chino Marino of Deftones and Team Sleep and Crosses and Palms. You know, he's got a lot of different bands going on. Deftones is obviously the one that he's best known for. He's an amazing artist. He's a super good dude. We get on really well. But because it was the first one, it was still very much focused on the new Deftones album, which is coming out, called Gore, which is incredible. I am a little bit gushing at the start, but then, you know, it's fine. He knows me. It's all good. I didn't come across too stalky. I hope I didn't anyway. So episode one, Swim Podcast, Mr. Chino Marino.
Swim Podcast, episode one. That's pretty
funny. This is it. You are the numero uno.
We're the pilot.
Yeah.
I like that.
No pressure. Right. Well, first and foremost, thank you for coming in.
Awesome. Thank you for having me, sir.
And as we said, this is the first one. So I'm actually kind of nervous again from like normally just doing an interview as if it was just for my radio show.
Yeah. Well, I mean, like I said, no pun intended, but it's sink or swim. And we want to swim.
We do.
Yes, sir.
We need to.
Yes.
So we should start off about the album.
Okay.
I think that's the easiest place to start, and then see where we get to.
All right, let's do it.
It's amazing. Right. I mean that.
Cool.
You know, like, I love your band. You know this, and I try not to be too creepy about it whenever we hang out.
Of course.
Because I see you guys as like, you know, I hold you in the same esteem as Faith No More and Jane's Addiction and those bands, which
great, yeah. Also, you know, me as well. Those are great bands. So that means that does holds a lot of weight for sure.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
And also, you've seen us, you know, in a lot of stages of our career. So you've seen us be great, and you've seen us be not so great. So that matters to me when you tell me that this record is great, because I know that you do know our band inside and out. You know, yeah.
But the thing is, I think like even at moments where you may have you probably look back on and shudder somewhat. I think from an outside perspective, it's always been like head and shoulders above everything else that was going on at the time. So I don't think you've got anything to worry about on that front. But yeah, I think this record is amazing. It's a weird one, obviously, because the way things are now, that you get a stream and you have to live in a very specific place with it.
Yes. Like, yeah. But see, I like that. You know, what's funny is that I still don't have a copy of the album as it is now. The version that I've been listening to it for the last 2.5 months, 3 months, has been the sequence that I put together in my computer at home, which is one solid MP3.
Okay.
So it's like 45 minutes or however long it is. I think it's like 46 minutes or something. And it's basically, so I've been listening to this batch of songs as one song.
But in this order?
In this order, the exact same thing. The sequence is cool because the idea of it, of this, I mean, the sequence was actually done very early on. Hmm. So as soon as the songs were all pretty much written, and we chose which songs were actually going to be on the record, aside from one song that actually didn't end up being on the record, which was, crazy enough, it was going to actually be the first song on the record. But I had sequenced the song with that other missing track in there, 12 songs, before we even actually tracked the record. So we tracked the record in order, in a way, and then I sang the record in order.
Wow.
And that was sort of an experiment that was kind of cool. The only thing that happened at the very end, once all 12 songs were recorded and sequenced and mixed, I decided that the first song wasn't as good as the rest of the songs on the record. And honestly, the first song was one of my favorite songs, but it just, sometimes when you record stuff, like it just doesn't, I don't know if it wasn't recorded right. I don't know if like the tempo was maybe tiny bit too slow or too fast, but when I took that song away, all of a sudden the record was like perfect. So we left that song off. But yeah, it's kind of crazy that the fact that you know we it was recorded in succession the way, and that's the way you're listening to it.
And how we say it was an experiment, and I mean, you know, just from listening to the record, I guess it's paid off because, like I said, it's great. But how do you think it's been different, rather than, except for just the process of making the record that way, how do you think it has changed the outcome in your perspective?
I can't really say because, you know, if I compared it to our other records, I can say that, I mean, you know, even doing that is kind of hard because it's its own record, you know?
Yeah.
So had we not done it this way, maybe it wouldn't have been as good. I don't know. I feel like it was just something that we wanted to try. If it worked, it worked. And honestly, it almost didn't work. I mean, if we would have left the first song on there the way it was, or even tried to move it, I think it would have been weird. But it was just kind of something like randomly that accident by taking that song away, all of a sudden making Prayers and Triangles the first song on the record, which is also the first single.
Yep.
You know, just kind of like, this is how I want people to hear us after being vacant for a few years. You know, the last thing we put out was Coney Oaken record, and this is the first thing people are going to hear when they hear us. So Prayers and Triangles, the first song people hear, you know, of us for you know, in the last 3 years, you know, I do care about what, you know, what our fans, how we're perceived. I'd lie if I said I didn't. Obviously we try not to let that dictate how and you know why we do things, of course, but I honestly think it's great that song is the introduction to us after you know being away for a little bit.
It's a strong opening lyric as well.
Yeah, I've tried for a lot of years to not be so literal with my lyrics. Obviously, I don't know if it's something that I'm scared to do or if it's something that I I don't shy away from. I don't know, but I you know, that's probably like pretty literal song there. I mean, it's sort of, you know, battling the duality of, you know, what's inside my head and my soul. You know what I mean? In a way, and it's a good duality of the kind of a representation, I guess, of what kind of band we are, what our music in general. That's very dynamic. It's very abrasive at times, and it's very luscious at times, I guess. Yeah. You know, you could say. And that song is a good, I think, interpretation of that. It has like a lot of these qualities in it and all in between. So
yeah, I think so. And I mean, that's something about the band is it's unmistakable, isn't it? You must be aware of that. That it's like you can hear any one of those songs, and as soon as it starts, like, it couldn't be anyone else.
Yeah.
But it doesn't. It's not treading water in any way. And mm-hmm. I think all the new additions to things, like the first thing that really jumped out at me as that I felt was like a new thing, mm-hmm. was like the verse of Doomed User.
Okay,
it's so rad. It's like it seems like to come out of nowhere, and it's like almost like classic. It's like a classic metal riff, but in a kind of like, you know, like if someone like Mastodon did it, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it's like, it works so well.
Yeah.
It's kind of like a new addition to the palette.
Yeah.
It's like,
although it's like you said, it's drawing from, you know, inspiration from straight metal. I mean, when I heard it too, I was just like, that's pretty fucking metal, right?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Obviously, I feel like, the way I approach it is a little different, you know, of vocally.
Yeah.
But I think that's what makes it us. Like you said, you hear it and you go like, wow, this is, you know, Deftones. But obviously for us, it's like we flirt with metal all the time, just like we flirt with all sorts of inspiration or, you know, genres and whatever, blah, blah. But it's kind of cool to hear a straight straight metal riff, you know what I mean, from a band that is, you know, that shies away from being straight metal at times, you know?
I know. And it feels so fresh.
Right on.
Yeah, it's right. Summit as well is the title saying about influences, because I thought it was funny. Like, I saw that you posted, was it on your Twitter or your Instagram, the picture of Martin Gore?
Yes.
It was amazing.
Right on.
Because as soon as the title was out there.
Yeah.
Excuse me. Because to me, like, I mean, it's an amazing word, and it has that kind of vibe, like, you know, when the Jesus would put out an album and it would be like a four name, like boosh, it's just like a short four letter word, and it would conjure up a bunch of different images. And
I'm very much into that. The four letter word thing is something that I was one of the main things that drew me to it. I mean, obviously the word itself is provocative in some way, you know, but it gives you a bit, you know. The main visual it gives you is very graphic.
Yeah, visceral.
Yes.
Yeah.
And but obviously juxtaposing that with the actual artwork, you know, was something that, like, you know, obviously, like I was saying a minute ago, represents sort of that, you know, yin and yang of what it is we do as a band. But yeah, I mean, it's a great. I liked it. It was difficult to make that decision, because anytime you're trying to name a record with one word or with one phrase or whatever, it's, you know, they're obviously every song sort of, you want every song to kind of stand on its own. You don't want to hear the first 30 seconds of any record and feel like, okay, well, I heard it all. Mm-hmm. I know what's coming next. So just to kind of put it in a box and have one name is definitely hard, but I don't know. I like it. I think, like I said, I think it's really sort of makes you think a little bit and question what's inside this, you know?
Yeah, and up against, like you said, the flamingos, which is such a beautiful image.
Yeah.
It's great. But also, knowing you and the stuff you're into, it made me think of Depeche Mode.
Yeah.
And it also made me think of Bowen and the Club de Gaulle.
Of course, that you know, obviously that's one of my favorite groups and all. And that, you know, the fact that is the name of that band, but their music is so, you know, soothing to me. I mean, some of it's pretty dark, but it's also very soothing.
Yeah.
I mean, they're a great, great, great band. But the Martin Gore thing was funny because, you know, we actually didn't release the title yet of the record. We were going to release everything together. We had like a pretty much mapped out plan of how we were going to roll the record out, or at least announce the record and the title and everything. and somebody had screenshot, like, you know, sending out the stream that we sent out for people to, for the press to hear. A journalist decided to screenshot his phone and then put it up online. So I had a good friend of mine who's like, you know, scours the internet all the time for any information, like sent me the picture. He's like, "Hey, is this real?" And I looked at it and I was like, "Yes, that is real. That is, that is the record. That's all the song titles. That's it." I was like, "Was it playing?" He's like, "No, that's just a screenshot. You can't push play on it." So the music didn't leak out, which is fine, but that did. So then that's, you know, the internet was up and it went up. Or like, "Oh, is this real? Is this fake?" So then I decided just to, you know, play a joke and put that picture up there to almost confirm, you know, in a sly way that yes, this is the actual album title, you know, whatever. So a lot of people were saying, you know, I was toying with people, but I actually thought I was actually giving them information, just a little coded information, you know.
Yeah,
with Martin Gore on there.
Does it kind of bum you out that this is the situation that it is now?
I think it is what it is. I mean, I could be bummed. I can sit around. I can complain about it. I can do this or that. But, you know, I think the worst thing would be if people didn't care. Honestly, you know what I mean. People, it shows that there is excitement around our band, and the fact that, you know, 20 whatever seven nine whatever years since we've been a band, really. The fact that people are still somewhat interested in what we're going to do, I can't get mad at that, you know, honestly.
Yeah, of course. It's a beautiful thing. But then I think that's, you know, that's a credit to you. You know, it's a lot of hard work and hard times and, you know, amazing creativity. So, but something I wanted to ask about, like, I when I went through the album the first time, like, I was just listening to it. And then the second time I went through it, I was trying to make notes.
Okay.
But I couldn't make notes because I was just listening to it. So it's kind of crazy. Like, I looked at some of them today.
Okay.
And it's just like, just it's almost like gibberish. But like, you know, for Acid Hologram, I'm like, all I've got is like, Julie Cruz, Meshuggah, like exclamation marks. And it's like, what does that mean? But at the same time, it kind of summed it up in a way. In my head, it's like as you've said, that is the beautiful thing about it, that balance between like crushing weight and this kind of ethereal, beautiful stuff.
Right on.
But at the same time, that's come some of the heaviest stuff, like lyrically. There's some really dark moments lyrically.
I think so. It's kind of wild. In retrospect, I'm the type of person that writes stuff, and I really don't look too deep into why I'm or what I'm trying to say or what I'm trying to not to say or whatever. But and then in retrospect, I'll look back and read stuff and go like, damn, that's pretty dark. Should I say that? Should I have said that or whatever? But that's where the ambiguity. Thank you, sir. Comes into play. Really, I mean, honestly, I like that. I like to throw curveballs. That's like that's my joy.
Yeah, and I think it's a beautiful thing as well that if it's a very pure thing to be writing. It's like any creative process, like writing lyrics or poetry, however you want to view it, creative writing, right? Or drawing and painting, or even writing music. It comes from a place.
Yes.
I believe. It sounds a little, but I believe that you're accepting things and then channeling them through you.
Yes.
Do you know what I'm saying?
Exactly.
And I think that's a pure thing that if you're writing lyrics that way, and then you go back and look at them and then you go, oh.
Yeah. I mean, and it's also a very like honest reaction to it. I mean, I don't have a notebook, you know, if this is going to, you know, crush someone's dreams, I'm sorry, but like, I'm not a poet. I don't have like a book of like poetry that I keep by my bed and open it up and say, oh yes. And like, write
like something. A dream diary.
This is so, oh yeah. Yeah. You know, I do not. I, what you're hearing is my reaction to the music that is presented in front of me. Simple as that. I mean, like I said, Stefan will play a riff and I'll just be like, you know, whatever comes to my head and out of my mouth and through my arm and down to my pen into the paper or whatever it may be, however it may be, it's a like almost an initial reaction, you know. Obviously I'll go through and, you know, it doesn't like, I'm not like, Jay-Z or something where like I don't write anything down. I just spit it out. I actually do, you know, sit after the initial. I mean, honestly, it's usually like melody first, obviously, and yeah. rhythm or how I want to sing over or through within the track. But and then words honestly just start to pop out, and then sentences, and then sort of themes, and then, you know, it kind of just builds in that way. But yeah, it's a very organic way of just straight reacting to what I'm hearing, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's something I also like about it, is that a lot, not just on this record, but it happens a lot on this record for me anyway. Again, this is probably me reading too much into things, but the way you deal with language, in the sense that with Pittura Informante,
yes,
as I understand it, it was like essentially calling, it was like shaming someone, calling someone out, right?
Yes.
So they would make these paintings,
yes,
and murals,
yes,
and it would be like if somebody had done something wrong, but they couldn't actually be charged with it, they would basically shame them publicly by making these paintings and putting it up.
Yes.
As
what I've read, yes.
Yeah, and so then learning this and then listening to it, I'm like putting it in a modern context, and it's almost like the way media does that now, because it still does it, you know.
Yes, sir.
It's like shaming people and calling them out without even, you know. I mean, that can be a good thing, I guess, calling people to task if they can't be, you know.
Yeah.
Can't be held accountable in any other way. Yeah. But at the same time, it can be a form of bullying, I guess. But I find it interesting that throughout your career, like there's certain things that make me want to go and look up these things,
yeah.
you know, because you have an interesting, like you'll find interesting phrases or like Koino Yokan.
Yes.
Which is beautiful. It's
yeah. I mean, like I said, that is the one thing that I do. I don't actually have a book of poetry. No, I do not. But I do, I will say, since you're not busting me out, I do actually keep notes on a lot of times words or phrases or things yeah. that are inspiring.
Yeah.
And I will, like, you know, reflect on them when I'm being creative or writing music. Yeah, yeah. I do. But that's usually like the third step. Like I said, first it's like the melody, then it's the thing, and then words start coming out. And then I look into my phrase sort of like
and catalog, or
word, even word catalog. I'll hear a word sometimes, or read a word in something, and I'll go, wow, I like that word. And then I'll put it down, and then, you know, I'll try not to overuse it or whatever. You know,
it'll
what I mean?
Find its place.
Yes, of course. Yeah. And that's you know, when those are those happy accidents that when they do happen and they work out, you're just like, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And like, I mean, I don't want to go on about it, but the Koino Yokan thing is beautiful as an idea. I mean, that's such, I love the way that some other languages will have a word or a phrase. Like German has these, which sounds like it can be such an abrasive language, but they also, you know, they have this thing sometimes where they'll just make up a word by cramming stuff together and then what it'll mean. Yes. Like Schadenfreude is like the obvious one.
What is it?
Schadenfreude, which is taking pleasure in other people's misfortune.
Oh, wow.
Which
I've never heard that.
That's heavy, I think.
That is very heavy, and it's also, you know, it's yeah. awesome. It's also cool when it's something, you know, that makes people want to look it up and like check it out. And
yeah.
it's even like, you know, for me, that's the kind of fun part about it. And then it really gets people to, or, you know, it shows that like people are actually that interested that go and actually research it and find this stuff. You know what I mean? It's like, honestly, me as a fan of music, I enjoy the shit out of that. I love going and an artist that I'm interested in, and like, if there's something that I don't understand, you know, trying to understand it, and I might even understand it wrong, but like the fact that, you know, so that's another reason why I don't like to, you know, do explain songs in general, you know what
yeah.
I mean? So much, you know what I mean? I will, honestly, if like, and especially with you, because, you know, you're interested. I know that you're interested, seriously, because you've done the homework and you are generally interested in what's going on. And I think, you know, some people are, but I feel like I kind of want them to, you know, draw their own conclusion of what's going on. As you know, look it up. If not, just take it for what it is, and sort of, I don't want to dictate to you what you're supposed to take from this. You know what I mean? I want you to, for one, listen to it and just absorb it, and then react the way you would react to it, and take what feelings it's giving off to you. You know, so that's kind of the most important thing. When we're making songs, is like, what, you know, conveying an emotion, and then just like, you know, the words are secondary, but the emotion is like, should be the most natural thing that just, you know, penetrates the listener.
Yeah. And do you find that those words fall into place quite easily?
Yes. I mean, it's not always easy. Yeah. I mean, that's actually the truth is that I hate writing lyrics. I mean, I won't say I hate it, but it's the hardest part of making a record, honestly.
Why? Because you feel pressured in the sense that people are going to sit and do what I've done and just pick them apart? Or
no, I mean, well, for one, I don't feel like I have anything to say. I mean, like, and I know that sounds weird, but I really don't. It's like, I'm not a political person. Mm. I don't have like all these opinions or like things that I feel like, wow, you need to know about this because this is the way I feel about this or that, or here's a story that I think you should be interested in. But you know, honestly, it's like, I want people to hear the music, be affected by it, and take what they want from it. And so when I'm writing lyrics, it's hard sometimes to just be myself it's not hard to be myself. It's easy to be myself. And so I start just sometimes like saying too much about or just like you were saying with Prayer to Triangles, like with the lyrics themselves, they're very introspective, I guess, in a way. Hmm. If we're you know, now that we're talking about it, and then so it's like, yes, I am giving away, like, I am talking about myself, and I am, you know, I'm still trying to be ambiguous about it, but there are, you know, it's like, as much as it is, it's like I'm uncomfortable with it, I guess, in a certain way. So I don't want to, like, I'll try to steer away from that as much as possible. Mm. And in doing so, I'm sort of, you know, binding my hands, because it's like I'm trying so hard to like not say certain things in order to keep it interesting and ambiguous.
Yeah.
You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah, totally.
Yeah, so for that,
it's like painting sense that you don't want to make, you don't want to paint something that's like
so literal,
that looks like a photograph. Yeah. Because I mean, there's a huge amount of skill in that, but
of course,
but that's what it is.
Exactly. You know, it's just so to
there's
be
no
too
interpretation.
So to be too literal is yeah, like, you know, danger or not dangerous. It's just, it's to me, it's just like, it's lazy, I guess. Well, you know what I mean? That's the way I perceive it. So I try not to be, and because of that, it takes me a long time sometimes to write a song out lyrically. And then also it's like with Deftones, I have a big part in the songwriting itself, you know, from the inception of the first melody or, you know, beat or whatever. Like which I enjoy. I love writing the songs, but it's basically like we'll get it, we'll write a song, and then the song is done musically, and then I have to approach it
from another
aspect, and it's like starting all over in a way. You know what I mean? Because
yeah,
I have to like bob and weave throughout what's something that I already think is great instrumentally,
yeah,
and not mess that up. You know?
Yeah.
So it's a task.
It's
sure.
Funny. Yeah, you never really think of it like that. I mean, that's a lot of pressure, I guess.
A little bit. That's why I get paid the big bucks.
Of course.
I'm kidding.
Yeah. I think, so going, well, without getting too much into that then, how are we saying it? Elmo?
What's that?
The track L.
Oh.
I've been going
Elmer. Yeah.
Elmo.
Well, it's
let's meet in real life, right?
Yes, it's an acronym. For
yeah,
that. Yeah, yeah. And but, it's something that I found actually online. I mean, I never go into chat rooms. I don't think I've ever been in a chat room, but it's chat room. Acronyms.
Do you does that world kind of? I think it's funny. I found some stuff a while ago that there was like this Christian website was like, you shouldn't let your kids type LOL anymore because it means loose for our Lord. And every time you write LOL, you're praising Satan.
Yeah.
And then that's going to make kids want to even do it more. And then a bunch of dudes on Reddit jumped onto it and made up a bunch of them. And they're like, yeah, YOLO means like youth obeying Lucifer's orders and all this stuff. So it's like,
awesome.
But it's like, it's funny you saying like you'd never go into that thing, but I think it's really poetic, especially when you put it in relation to.
I mean,
to
honestly,
the song itself,
I like the phrase "let's meet in real life." That's kind of saying like this: we're me and you speaking right now is not reality.
Yeah.
There's another realm that you know we should go hook up in and have a conversation or you know whatever. So I've always there's a lot of stuff on our. Last few records where I've sort of reflected on like wow, I talk a lot about running away and going somewhere else and being on another realm or another plane or something. So,
and what do you think about that? What do you think those things are?
I don't know. I think it's romantic. I've always thought that there's some there's like this huge romantic idea of leaving everything
and existing elsewhere.
Yeah, and existing in another plane, you know.
Do you think that is a thing? We're going to get into it, do you mind
getting
into it? I don't
know. I don't mind getting into it. I do. I like that idea.
I do as well.
Yeah.
I think as I get older, I like it way more as well.
Yeah.
I think.
You know, and no disrespect to my family and friends, you know, obviously, I don't, it's not like one of those things where like, you know, I hate you all. I want to be away from you all. I mean, obviously, it's just more of like a romantic, optimistic idea that there's something else that's way bigger than all of this. You know?
Yeah, I believe there is.
Yeah,
and I believe that
that's not heaven. You know?
Or
hell. You know, it's just like I'm not talking about on a spiritual level. I'm talking about like on a straight metaphysical level. You know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that's like it kind of goes back to what I was trying to say earlier about when you're making art that you're communing.
Yeah.
Maybe. I don't know.
Yeah, no, I mean I'm with that.
Yeah.
I feel you.
Yeah. But I mean that song is I think that's one of the heaviest things on the album as well. I got like a very Björk kind of vibe as well.
Oh yeah,
I think, and it
awesome.
And you know, that's a tick in a box for me.
Yeah,
you know, I like it. If something makes me think of other great art, and I don't mean in a plagiaristic way. I mean just like
yes, I understand.
But it like ding hits the same heartstring or whatever, you know.
Yeah, I've been talking about this a lot lately, and as I've been doing press about. Influences and stuff like that. And like I said some interview where I think one of the first interviews I did about the new record, and I made the mistake of they asked me like what I've been listening to or something, and I said, oh, I've been listening to a lot of Morrissey solo records, whatever. And then like right away, like even to this day, all the press has been like, oh, so we heard your new record sounds like Morrissey or is influenced by Morrissey. And I'm like, you know, I don't want to say no, because obviously, I mean, you know, everything that I listen to since I was a kid is influenced this record, you know, and everything that I listen to today has influenced it. I think the art of it is to like let that happen organically. You know, I mean, we never like sit around and say, oh, well, I want this song to sound like this Bjork song or that or this whatever.
Yeah.
But it's great when those influences actually naturally organically come through the music.
Yeah, it's definitely, for me, I'm always, I don't know, just because I think I overthink things and I'm a fan of music.
Well, I do too.
I think you kind of make associations with things that move you.
Yeah, I think so. And I think that's a good thing. That's a good, healthy, positive thing, you know?
Yeah.
I think we are going to be Deftones by default because that's just who we are. When I sing, I'm me. You know, when Stefan plays guitar, he's him, and when you put those two things together, and Abe's playing the drums on it, it's Deftones, no matter what. But the fact that if we can utilize our influences and not to be such a literal thing, but just something that just happened, then that's like, that's it. I mean, that's having fun being influenced, but you know, being yourself. I mean, that's just like, you know, it's something that happens organically. It's like great. I think, and like you said, you heard a song and you hear tinges of that in there, whatever. And it's like, that's great. Some of the greatest things in art, like a lot of times you like it because, or even not even art, but like sometimes you look at a girl and you go, wow, that girl's pretty or whatever. And then you think about, why did I think that girl's pretty? You know, out of all the girls that I just walked by, you know why? Because she's something about her reminds you of something, some other girl or something else that, you know, it's like association is something that, that is not a bad thing at all. It's like, you know, it's, you know, if you really start to get deep into things, you realize why you like certain things. Why are you attracted to certain things? You know, and I guess that's how, you know, things are connected in a lot of ways.
Yeah,
we're getting all hippie on here now.
No, man, it's true. You know,
I only had one of these too, and you got me all.
We got another one.
I think I do. Look at I'm.
You want another one?
I got about one little sip left.
All right, where was I going to go next? Oh yeah, another thing is Xenon, which I found was interesting because it. It's another video game reference, right? In a title.
Sorry, yeah. Yes. Mommy, most definitely.
That there used to be like a TV show here in, like when I was a kid, called Get Fresh.
I never heard of it.
Okay. And basically what they used to do, this was how old school it was. They would have that game and a kid would be like sat with a joystick, but with a blindfold on.
Okay.
And then another kid at home would phone up and would be like, left, right, fire, fire, fire. And that was like, that was entertainment. So like that made me, yeah, it was kind of weird. Sorry, that was like a weird, it was kind of like stepping back into something that had been locked away for a long time. It's kind of weird. Awesome.
Well, I mean, obviously, you know, anything from, you know, 80s. Growing up like that is like nostalgic for me, at least, you know, I'm sure for you as well.
Yeah.
So, I was actually inspired by that. I was in Germany. I think I was in like, Cologne or something like that. And I was walking just like aimlessly. And I walked by this arcade in the window they had. And I stopped and I took a picture of it. I love the artwork in that video game, the way it looks and everything. So I still have it. I still have it in my phone. Just a cool picture and the reflection of the video game through the window and the lights in the back. It just looked like I was on another planet. So I was just right away like, oh, I love this picture. But why I named that song that is because the if you listen at the very beginning of the song, that the sounds that it make, there's like this kind of electronic little loop thing that happens before the guitar kicks in.
Yeah.
And it totally like just reminds me of an 80s video game. So it was like, it was more of like a working title thing that I just ended up keeping because why not? Yeah.
Yeah, it works.
Yeah.
Okay. There's, what you were saying about how, you know, when you sing on something, when Steph plays guitar on something, when Abe plays drums, it instantly sounds like Deftones. And I think, something that, like, when I first got the record, I sent Sergio a text and I was like, dude, it's amazing. Smashed it. It sounds great. And he was like, yeah, I'm really stoked on it. And I was like, you know, this wasn't like me trying to get prep for an interview, but I was just like, oh, like, what's your favorite jam? What's the thing for you? Because for me, like I said earlier that when I, on the first listen of the album, I was like, this is great. And then it got to, track 5 is Heart's Wires, right?
Yeah, and then you were like, damn, this sucks.
God, it was going so well. No, but I was like, this is my favorite song on the record.
Yeah.
Straight away. And I thought it was one of those things where it's like, you're listening to it for the first time.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and it's not like it wasn't like anything else didn't stand out. That's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is...
No, I get exactly what you're saying.
Yeah.
No, that... I feel like that's when the record even jumps up another notch.
Yeah,
it's like
I do too.
I think that's a strong part of the record. It's a great song too.
Yeah, but each time I've gone back, and, you know, like I said, you know, the first time I'm just listening to it, second time I'm listening and trying to, like I'm absorbing it, but also trying to think, I got to, like... speak about this to you and try and make notes and couldn't because I was just feeling it.
Yeah.
But then I got to that song again. I was like, oh, this is my favorite song on the record.
Mm-hmm.
And then each time
So is that what Sergio said when you talked to him?
No. Like, sorry. Yeah, this is an offshoot.
That's right.
But so I was trying to find out, like, you know, what he was most stoked on. But then he said, I'm really stoked. I get to play my Fender 6 on a bunch of the songs on the album.
Yes.
And then I listened to it again, thinking about that. And then you can hear that.
Yes.
And that's what that some of the added weight.
Yes.
Is.
Yeah.
And you know, and then it's like, oh, okay, well then that's what. This is the added thing now that, like, you know, like the, rather than stripping an onion away, you're adding to it, you know? Like,
yes. But in a way it's almost, I mean, yes, adding different instruments, but I think because he played that on a lot of the record, which if a lot of people don't know, bass six is not so much a six string bass as it is a sort of a guitar with bigger gauge strings on it.
Yeah, it's more than a baritone guitar. Because
a baritone and then a little tiny bit. It's not like a bit, like, because I think a lot of people think it's like one of those big, huge, like, basses
with a neck like as thick as like a headboard or a bed.
Yes, like this monitor right here. With strings on it. No, but it's.
That's something I saw online actually afterwards.
Really?
So, yeah, people were like, oh, he's playing a six string bass. And then instantly people are like, oh, cool. You know, like
Deftones are like Dream Theater now.
Like Victor Wooten stuff going on. Yeah. It's like,
but it's really what I think what's cool about it is this is almost the opposite. It's almost stripping away things, because what happens is that Stefan, because he plays those ridiculously big guitars, you know, he ends up taking up a lot of the low end frequency of the sound of the guitar sound, really. So what all of our job is, I guess, to do is to fill in the void of, or, you know, to sort of fit in, you know, into place where, you know, we're all sort of taking up a different range of sound.
Yeah.
And while we're writing, and that's what ended up happening with him playing that guitar, you know, is everybody just sort of trying to complement each other as opposed to everybody just trying to see who could be louder and heavier and on their top string, basically.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. It was definitely worked.
Yeah, I think it's good. That one's really cool. There's like some cool guitar stuff where there's one part of that where he hits this note and it sounds like Chris Isaac. You know, you know what I'm talking about, right?
Blue
is on fire. I mean, but it's like this. It's like it's actually really beautiful. But yeah, I was like, damn, that's such a Chris Isaac right there. But
amazing.
Yeah, but he's, I mean, I love the fact that he picked that thing up.
Yeah.
You know, I think it's awesome. And it's actually like, it's like an old, it's like, I want to say it's a vintage guitar. It's an old Fender guitar. It's not, it's our bass, whatever, but it's not, I mean, I think, I heard that, I think John Lennon played one on a, was it Helter Skelter?
Yeah.
I want to say, or like somewhere on the White Album, he played a bass six, but they're older guitars. It's not like, you know, any kind of new technology that are, you know, a thing that came out, whatever. It's actually an old, you know, piece of gear, old guitar. And he bought two of them when we were recording Kono Yoken, he bought two of them at the same time. And
knowing full well that I'm going to need a backup for stage at some point.
Yes, exactly. But he didn't end up sneaking it on that record. And then when we went to write this new record, he pretty much strapped that thing on every day. And it was cool. We wrote songs with it. It was neat. Yeah. It was neat. Yeah.
Yeah. That's cool. There's something I only just found out about as well was Jerry Cantrell.
Yes.
not awareness. I don't mean like the awareness that the man exists.
Yeah, right. But yeah, he's this guy.
And there's this guy.
He's a part of the grunge movement.
He's written some songs.
Yes.
He's pretty solid. So he's on the album, but I only just found that out. But I don't know where. Like, I hadn't had a chance to go, like, do my thing where I'm like, oh, well.
Well, I'll tell you what. Honestly, I wish that, you know, whenever we have any guest on the records, I like it not telling people anyways. I think what happened was somehow it happened where probably me. I probably slipped up and said, oh, yeah, I was working with Jerry or whatever. But I love the fact that people didn't know, because it's one of those things on the record where it happens where, I mean, I'm sure you might have noticed this too. So it's on song 10, what's the name of the song? Phantom Bride.
Wait.
Yes. And there's a part of the song where you're probably going to go like, wow, Deftones really took a left turn right here. Look at your notes. What does it say?
It just says solo.
Yes. Yes. So So, you know, it's one of those things where it's a little, you know, unconventional for what for us. We never play solos. I can't play solos. Stefan might be able to play solos, but he doesn't.
Yeah.
So,
because I was like,
you were caught off
damn,
guard.
He's like,
you were caught off guard.
Yeah. I was like, whoa, he's pulling a solo out of the bag and it sounds so triumphant. I'm amazed.
Yeah. So that's all it was. I mean, the song itself was already written. You know, that's pretty funny.
Yeah.
And then, you know, it was one of those things where we sat around and we were just kind of joking around like, wow, would it be cool to have a solo right here? And the names we started coming up with were you know, that was what was really funny. We started like really just like, you know, should we get Steve Stevens, you know, or whatever. Or just like people like who like, you know, we grew up listening to think whatever, you know. And then obviously we came back to Earth. We're like, okay, maybe not, maybe let's call Jerry and see if he'll come in and just like, you know, play on this thing. And actually at that point we hadn't even recorded the song. It was just, we had a recording from our practice place. So I was like, well, you know, he's somebody, obviously we know he's been friends with us for a long time. So
yeah.
I sent him the song. I texted him, said, hey, I got this song, whatever. Would you be interested? He's like, yeah, send it over. Send it to him. And that's exactly how he sounds too. Hey, I sent it over. No, he doesn't talk like that. He sent it over. I sent it over. He sent it back the next day with like that exact thing that he did on the record on it.
And it's amazing.
It's like, you know, it was, so it was something very organic. But what I was saying about people not knowing, I like the fact of people just like finding it out on this or hearing the song. It's like with White Pony, when Maynard was on Passenger, we didn't put like, you know, Passenger featuring Maynard Keenan, or it wasn't in the press that he was on the record.
Yeah.
So people just heard White Pony and they got to like, you know, whatever song it is on the record. And then they're all of a sudden like, hold on, that kind of sounds like Maynard, you know? Hold on, that is Maynard. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I think it's more interesting, like to when people figure stuff out for themselves. Yeah. So sadly, people already know already. It's not a surprise, but
well, it like I knew, like as I said, I found out that he was on the record, but I didn't know where.
Yeah.
And it's funny that I guess I did, but I didn't know.
Yeah.
Because that's all I've written underneath that song is just solo exclamation mark. It's funny.
That's great.
But it's funny as well because it makes me think about like your spot on the Lamb of God record, because I knew Greg had done some stuff on the record and I knew you'd done a song on the record.
Mm-hmm.
So I was listening to it first time, fully aware. So I was looking out for it.
Does it say on the record featuring? Does it say where?
No,
I don't think it does.
No, it doesn't. Okay. But I knew that you were both on it.
Gotcha.
So. That kind not tainted the listen because the first listen I just want to just
yeah,
but I was like straight away going, oh, where is it? But then as soon as Embers comes on and I'm like, you know, because I'm waiting for the song, waiting for the spot, and then when it drops that bit in the middle eight before your vocal even comes in, that it hits that bit and I was like, this is where you're coming in, and then boom, straight away, and it's like, you know, it makes sense.
Awesome. Yeah.
I mean, it's funny
when I got hit up by them, I mean, it was like, you know, it was presented like there's just spot in the song that we think you'd sound good in.
Mm.
You know what I mean? So they probably thought the same thing, like, this is where Gino would come in. And actually, it's funny, they only sent me that section of the song.
Oh,
so
really?
I didn't even hear the whole song. I just got sent that section of the song. And it's like, this is, and so it was like, you know, whatever it is, 30, 40 seconds, 45 seconds of music.
Yeah.
And then I was like, okay, I came up with the melody in my head. And then I was in L.A., a couple months later, and you know, Randy hit me up and was like, you know, can you come up to the studio and record tonight? And I was like, okay. I went to up there, and like literally we did that in an hour.
Wow.
Like 1 hour. And he wrote I sang him the melody that I had come up with. He was like, okay, give me a minute. He walked out outside and he wrote the lyrics. And it was really cool for me, you know what I mean? Because I've never really sang anybody else's lyrics. I always write, you know, whatever, my own stuff. And so it was, obviously an experience, like, you know, just like, okay, cool. You know, and he wrote it and kind of explained to me what the song was about. And I was like, cool. And I went in and I sang my part. And then not until that album came out, or actually he sent me the full version of the song, like, I think a couple weeks before the record was going to come out.
Yeah.
And I got to hear the whole song, you know what I mean, at how it was, you know, with everything else in it. But up until that point, I only heard the section that I was on.
You know what's funny as well is that I spoke to him a while ago when that record came out and we were just chatting and this thing came up, and I was like, you know, as soon as that section hit, I knew that's where you were going to come in.
Yeah.
And he said, the funny thing is that when they were writing that song, they got up to that point and there were two versions. Okay. So they had one, it went off in one direction, he said, which was very, very Lamb of God, as you'd expect, you know, very metal. And, you know, I love that band, so this isn't, that's not a cuss. And then they had this other version as well. Mm-hmm. And I think the consensus was that well, we like this version. So they went with it. And then he said that he was driving, it was either back from rehearsal or back from the studio, whatever. He was driving along and he was listening to it instrumentally. And he was like, damn, we've got to get Chino to sing on this bit. And then he got in the next morning and he goes to Mark. He's like, oh, I've had an idea. And Mark went, yeah, you know what we've got to do? And they both said the exact same thing.
Which he told me that. He actually told me that.
Yeah, it's funny.
Yeah. No, it was neat. And I'm glad it, you know, it worked out. And I'd only actually really befriended him, I want to say, you know, maybe a year before that. I'd never really met him before. But when I did, he came to one of our shows and we were playing in Richmond, Virginia.
He's a great dude.
Yeah. And he was like, you know, I didn't expect this at all because, you know, they're a pretty metal band, whatever. Mm. And I'd never met him before. And he's like, yo, man. He's like, he told me this elaborate story about how him and his wife got together through listening to White Pony. And it was like, they used to listen to it together all the time and stuff like that. And I was like, wow. It was pretty awesome, yeah.
Spreading some love in the world.
Yeah, man. Making babies.
Making babies.
Yep, making babies happen.
Well, that's
adding
a beautiful
to the population.
Nice. It is interesting as well. Thank you. You've got kids.
Yes, I do.
And I think it's funny because I thought about this when I was first looking at the Elmo thing and mm-hmm. and like people not knowing what their kids are saying, mm-hmm. like all these secret codes that so the kids can communicate and the folks won't know what's up.
Yeah.
But I mean, I have got a couple of kids as well, and I think I have a handle on it. But I mean, your kids, sons playing in bands?
Yeah, both my sons are grown. I mean, they're men now. They're 18 and 21.
Yeah.
So they're both musicians. So they both are like, you know, way into their music. They grew up, you know, with me and their mother, who's also like very much into music. I met her because we started talking about Duran Duran actually one day. But she was like way into like punk, and she was kind of a punk rocker. Our house when we were married, when we were together, like we had like a tiki bar straight in our house, like downstairs in our house with like records, like, you know, a whole wall of records and like musical equipment. And like, so we had like a whole, like kind of like a pub in my house. And we used to hang out there, host parties and stuff all the time. My kids were very, like, they grew up like around music all the time.
Yeah.
And it's cool because they, you know, they're very like knowledgeable about music. I mean, more than me, actually. I mean, I don't want to say they're more than me. They don't know more than me. But they know a lot about music and about a lot of different music. They've been exposed to a lot of different music. And so it's cool. Like one of them, Jacoby, who's 18, he's way into, like he's actually in a band called Death Rogan. They're like a skate thrash punk band.
Yeah.
Like totally like just dirty, dirty punk. Like, and he sings and he plays guitar. He writes a lot of the music. I think now he's got a guitar player. So now he's just a singer. And it's so funny because he looks like me. I mean, he's like, you know, he's like got a lot of my traits and he's like, you know, but straight up like punk, you know what I mean? And it's like, but I totally see myself in him, you know, or see my younger self, like, just like, wow, that's how I was. That's how I looked when I was his age. And he's just like, you know, he very independent. They both are. They don't really ask me for like, you know, I need this or I need that or whatever. Like they're really about like, I love the fact that they're figuring stuff out on their own. And that's what, I mean, that's the funnest way to do things, to figure things out on your own. I mean, I did. I didn't have anybody showing me what to do or telling me what to do or whatever. I mean, obviously I will help them any way I can, but they're very independent. And then so So that's Kobe. He's 18. Christian is 21. He's my oldest son, and he's a DJ and he's like an electronic musician. So he does like you know, plays synths and like makes like really, I don't even want to, it's almost like industrial, like electro, like, you know, a lot of it's like, it's very like minimal throwback, like 80s stuff, whatever, but it's genuine. It's totally him. It's who he is. I mean, he looks like, you know, he looks like Freddie Mercury. He's just like this, like, you know, tall, slender guy with a mustache, you know, wears leather clothes and lives in San Francisco and like is in some crazy scene, and he's very much his own person. It's awesome. Yeah. It's like they are both very much their own people. And as much as they may or may not like Deftones, I think they, you know, like, it's awesome that they're musicians and they're totally on their own path.
Yeah,
it's great.
That must be gratifying.
Totally.
But at the same time, I know that what it must have been like when I was first doing, like, getting into music and playing shows and, you know, just, you know, trying to fight the fight. I know how it must have been for my parents. It must have just been like, yeah, why are you doing this? This is a...
Oh, I'm,
there's
I've
nothing
become
in
that
this.
Person, though. I've become...
But have
that,
you? That's what I was going
to
say.
I mean, I have. It's true. I have to be the one to, like, let them know. Because it's almost like... I have to explain this. I say, listen, I started making music or was making records in a time where there was artist development. There was, you know, like, there was a lot... It was different. People were actually selling records. You know, you could make a living on being a musician. And I'm not trying to discourage them that they can't. But like, even us, like, we have to go on tour. We have to play as an established band. You know, we have to still tour, you know, a third or more of the year, probably 2/3 of the year to maintain a living. It's like very hard work. You know, you're not going to, you know, just, you know, if their goals are to raise a family and to be, you know, fathers themselves, whatever, like they're going to need to like have something solid in their life. So now I'm that parent that's just like, you know, saying that stuff, but trying. I feel like an asshole. I feel like, man, I'm just like discouraging them, but I'm not really. I try not to, at least, you know, but you know, when like they call me and they try to tell me, yo, I got this show and I'm doing this. I'm like, oh, that's all great. What's going on right with your school? Like, you know, I mean, that's my first thing. It's like, I am concerned about their educations, obviously. You know, but that's just, I think I'm coming from a good place of, you know, of knowledge of what to expect being a musician.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah.
It's a fine line to walk, isn't it?
It is.
It's like, you know, it's a beautiful thing to see when your kids are getting to that point where they're finding their own way and making things and being creative, and at the same time you just kind of want to be that voice of reality as well, going, yeah, it's tough.
Yeah. Yeah. No, definitely. But I am very proud of them, and I love the fact that they're very much on their own path. I think that's great.
Yeah, awesome.
Yeah.
All right, cool. I just need to do a quick time check. What is that? What? 54. Oh, is it?
Wow, I'm gonna tell you right now. If I subscribed to the Swim podcast hosted by Daniel P. Carter, and I listened to the pilot episode featuring Chino Moreno from Deftones, I would probably be stoked.
Yeah,
and I would probably keep listening. I would. I think it's great. Cool. I think it's very fluent conversation we're having, and I think that's the most important thing when you listen to a podcast. You don't want to hear people talking over each other or be awkwardly, you know, just like trying to pull information out. It's like you want to listen to a conversation, you know?
Yeah.
That's what I do. I mean, I listen to a lot of podcasts, honestly, when I'm driving, especially. It's like...
Yeah, me too.
Yeah. It's sad. I think we're getting old, actually. Like, we don't even listen to music in the car anymore. We listen to like people talk.
Yeah, we kind of like voyeuristically sort of sit in on other people's conversations.
Right?
That's a good thing, though.
I think so. I like it. I enjoy it.
Well, that's a good place to finish, I think.
Cool, man.
All right. Well, thanks for coming in, and thanks for doing this for the first one. That was remarkably painless. Right, so that's it. Swim podcast episode 1. We're up and running, or swimming rather. I think Chino was a great place to start because he's a good dude. He's in some amazing bands. Deftones are
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am, but Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
One of the finest bands we have. And I think Gore is a fantastic record. So it made sense to start with that for me anyway. I hope you enjoyed it. If there's other people you'd like to hear on the podcast, let me know. Hit me up. You can contact me via Twitter and Instagram, which is at Daniel P. Carter. You can also hit up the podcast, which is at Swim Podcast on Twitter and Instagram as well. I've got a list of people that I want to appear in future episodes, and I'm currently punishing them or their press officers or whatever, just to try and make it happen. I'm actually using dark ceremonial magic to infiltrate their dreams as well, so they feel compelled to appear on it. So hopefully that will all pan out nicely and we'll get some really interesting people on. You may have noticed as well that that the cover for this episode is a painting of Chino that I did. I'm going to actually do like a painting of every person that comes on the show, just because I try and draw and paint every single day anyway, just because I feel it's a form of magic, and it's a beautiful form of ritual. So I try and do that as often as possible, and I figured that it was a good excuse that, you know, each episode has to have like a little sign of cover image and of who's on it, and I figured painting them was a good way of doing that. If that comes across as being creepy and weird, that's because I'm a weird creep. Enjoy. As I said, hit me up, tell your mates, subscribe, spread the word. Unze love. Corey Taylor is on next week's episode. Thanks.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.